The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
And a very good morning to you all. This is Ryan Tubridy on Thursday morning, the 23rd of January 2020. We're with you till 10. The text number 51551, email ryan@rte.ie. What a strange few stories I have for you. First, one of the things that when you look at the news and you see what's happening in China with the virus and the masks that you see them wearing, I just cover my face, the masks that they wear, and you see sometimes people who are possibly from China, but they might be on the train or on a bus in Europe, and they wear them much more than you would see people who are from that particular part of the world, that is to say Europe. And in the footage last night watching the news, everyone's wearing these particular masks, and it makes it all feel like something out of a science fiction movie. The virus, the contagion, is it coming, and what exactly is being done, and how serious is it, etc., etc. Now, the fellow on the Morning Ireland this morning, who's holed up in his apartment with what sounds like two bottles of water and a tin of beans, sounded kind of perplexed by it rather than panicked by it, but he definitely suggested that he wasn't going to go outdoors. And one of the stories today talks about these masks, saying that using these particular surgical masks to prevent infection is popular in many countries around the world, particularly China, because of this coronavirus outbreak, where they are also worn to protect against high pollution levels. So virologists, they're in charge of this, but they're sceptical. They're sceptical about their effectiveness against airborne viruses. There's some evidence to suggest the masks can help prevent hand-to-mouth transmissions. So these masks were first introduced into hospitals in the late 18th century, and they didn't make the transition into public use until the Spanish flu outbreak in 1919. Do you ever think about that? You get through 4 years, the most horrible war of all time, and then the flu lands on the doorstep. You must go, what was happening to humanity at that point? Anyway, 1919, that flu went on to kill over 50 million people. And we have 17 dead poor souls in China so far, but just do the sums there, 50 million were killed with that flu. So this doctor, David Carrington, said that routine surgical masks for the public are not an effective protection against viruses or bacteria carried in the air, which was how most viruses were transmitted, because they're too loose. And they had no air filter, and therefore the eyes were exposed. And that's what the guy was saying today, that if you sneeze and it comes through the mask because they're loose, hits your eyes, you're done. You're like, you've got the virus. So that's why these things, while it might make you feel a bit better, it feels to me like a viral placebo. You walk around thinking, I've got this, I'm cool, I'm good, I'm safe. I'm on this train, which is essentially a can full of humanity. You know, but I've got this on. It makes you feel good about yourself, but chances are it'll get through that and into your eyeball, you're goosed. But they could help, it says, lower the risk of contracting a virus through the splash from a sneeze. That's their word, not mine. Or maybe a cough. And it provides some protection against hand-to-mouth transmissions. So I think the lesson from that story is, do wear one if you're in China, and good luck. I mean, that's all it is. I think you probably, if I was over there, I'd wear one. Because I don't want somebody's sneeze splash coming into my eyeball. I'd like to just take the risk that the loose mask will take the splash from the other person. Now, why is the word pettifogging in the news? If anyone's been watching the impeachment trial of Donald Trump, you'll know. And in fact, if you ever watch any trial with a judge, a lot of judges are, you know, from another era sometimes. And no offence to judges, but they sometimes love to use very archaic words. Now, of course, the nerd in me loves this because I like words and I'm intrigued by old words and new words and the etymology of words and all of this. So the Chief Justice in the middle of the proceedings turned around and he said, in the 1905 Swain trial, a senator objected when one of the managers used the word pettifogging, and the presiding officer said the word ought not to have been used. And he said, I don't think we need to aspire to that height of standard, but I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are. So what does it mean? To pettifog is, according to the dictionary, to quibble over insignificant details or engage in legal chicanery. So People who quibble over insignificant details, they are people I don't want in my life because they take up time that is utterly useless. I mean, they're quibbling over unnecessary. You know, some people who can't tell a story, but they want to tell a story. These are the same people who say to cut a long story short. They never cut it short, ever. And they will go around the houses to tell you. And then they do the worst thing when they're pettifogging. They say things like, wait till I tell you, I went down to the shop yesterday. No, was it the shop or the... Anyway, it was Super Value or Spire. No, was it Centra? I don't know. Now, they're pettifogging over the most stupid... I don't care. What happened to the shop? Did you meet the person or not? I met Anne, who's a sister-in-law. No, wait a minute. Was she a cousin? I'm not sure. Was it Centra? Or did I meet the cousin? You go, please now, please. Beam me away from this. Star Trek me up into the Enterprise from this pettifogging person. So now we all know pettifogging. Do you know any pettifogging? Any people who pettifog to get the pettifog out of here? That's what they call them, pettifogging. That's what they do. Elsewhere in the news, emotional support animals. Let's talk about them for a moment. So when you get on a plane, if you have a guide dog, bring the dog on. We've spoken about this before. They're important. Emotional support animals are important for people who have been given this gift, and it allows them open their minds and their hearts and their personalities. They are tremendous, and I see them out and about, and they're wonderful. But this, there is a problem, because some people are taking the mick out of the system. That's the bottom line. And in America, they're seeking to limit the kinds of animals that some airlines, that all airlines, must allow to board for free. So it's one thing to say, this dog calms me, it's for therapy, and absolutely everyone is fully agreed that that's great. But then you have people coming on, and American Airlines said that in 2018, some passengers attempted to fly with what they described as comfort turkeys, right? They said, this is my turkey, it's for comfort. It's my a gliding possum known as sugar gliders. Somebody said, this snake is for my therapy. These guys are taking... The airline has now prohibited flying with frogs, ferrets, hedgehogs and goats, even if they are therapy animals. This is not a joke. People are saying, oh, it's for therapy, and they're abusing the system. And it's kind of comical in some ways, but it's actually really unfair on people who are legitimate. And then they say, oh, well, look, you can't be debasing my currency because mine is strong. I need this dog. So that's what's happening over there. Oh, I can't believe I'm going to do a Paul McCartney story, but I am. Paul McCartney's autograph value is the highest of all living celebrities, jumping up 18% since 2016. I presume that comes with age. The older they get, the more value on it. But out of the living celebrities, McCartney's has the most valuable signature, according to this place. You'll get essentially 3,500 euro for a Macca signature. He's 77, and that's what you're going to get for it. You know, I met him once. It's one of the most embarrassing photographs in my collection. I'm so horrified by myself in it. I was totally starstruck, and it's terrible. But I have the picture, and it's not hanging anywhere. It's actually, again, facing the wall, but it's there. And he did sign a thing for me, but I can't find it. So I have a signed CD thing from him, and I have no idea where it is. So that's it. I'm hoping to see him for my 10th concert appearance to go and see Macca at some point very, very soon. 51551. Oh, Ryan says, Mary, yes. I so agree with you about pettifogging. I absolutely hate it. It's everywhere. And another says that there's some excellent pettifogging in Father Ted, with Mrs. Doyle being an expert. Yep. That's who they are, and that's what they do. Now, what else have I got for you? I've got great news. I've told you recently that I went to see this one of my favourite singers when I got to in Bristol last summer. And the reason I went was because this singer, I had gone to see him in the Marquee in Cork about 2 years ago. And I couldn't believe a man of his vintage and his pedigree could sing like he was 20 years old, but having lived a full life, because he's going to be 80 this summer. And you know who I'm talking about, of course, because all you need to hear is just the beginning of Tom Jones from the Valleys. I want you on my team. Is coming back to Ireland. This is a beautiful thing, because if you've never seen Tom Jones live, now's your chance. He's going to be 18 in the summer. He's coming to the Live at the Marquee, which is a beautiful venue. It's going to be one of the last ones they'll have. It's going to be the 2nd of June, so we're going to be summery and excited and happy. And it's this tickets on sale next Thursday. So don't mind that. But when you think of Tom Jones, you've got all, you've got obviously all the great songs that he's done down through the years.
What's new, whoa, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
So he'll do that and he'll do this.
Just help yourself to my lips.
Come on.
To my arms, just say the word and there you are.
And then he'll do this.
Yes, they smiling sweetly.
It's a sad song, isn't it? But still, we like
it. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home.
And he'll bring a bit of sleaze, of course.
I'll help you take off your shoes. Maybe take off your dress.
That's enough. Now, a bit early for that, Tom.
But she's never in the way. Always something nice to say. What a blessing.
Not one of my favorites, but still.
You know what you are, you are. Sex bomb, sex bomb. Yeah, you're a sex bomb. You can give it to me when I need to come along. Give me sex bomb, sex bomb.
Little early for that, is it not?
My, my, my Delilah.
It just doesn't end. Tom Jones in Cork in the Marquee. Are you going
to
go?
Mama told me not to come. Mama told me.
Loving it so much. Okay, so I met Tom Jones in 2010 on The Late Late Show. Quick question for him about being a kid and when he goes from being 8 years old in his living room.
Is it the case, Tom, that you know, you literally as a child stood behind the curtain and insisted your mother introduce you to the room? I mean, were you that young a starter?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I've never known life without singing. My mother was cleaning the house.
Yeah.
And I would say, Mom, you got to introduce me, you know. I want to sing a song. She said, well, sing it then. I said, no, but I got to be introduced. So I would get up in the window, apparently, you know, in the kitchen, and pull the curtains over. And then I'd say, right, okay, you know, introduce me. So my mother would introduce me to, there was nobody else there, you know, just the two of us. And then I would, you know, open the curtains and jump out of the window and start to sing in the...
You know, there's so many people watching tonight that would love you to jump out from behind their curtains tonight. Please welcome.
What a lovely man. What a great voice. So you got to go. And I'm telling you, I try not to sell you a pup on this show, but they are that, and that lovely venue, the sound, the man himself, as I say, he's hitting 80. He sounds like he sounds 20, 30, 40 years younger than with the voice. I mean, people will have to ask him, do you think, Tom, your fans will go to your concert?
Yes, they will.
Had to do that, didn't I? Now, what track will we do? I mentioned at the top of the week Johnny Cash's version of this song, but when I went to see this guy, Tom Jones, who's playing live at the Marquee Cork 2nd of June, Botanic Gardens Belfast May 31st, but that's tickets on sale next Thursday at 9, tomjones.com for details. And the song I'm going to play now is not one of those big hits, even though I'm sure you'd like to hear that, but you can download them later on. This is his version of God's Gonna Cut You Down. Now, it's live from a BBC 4 session, so it won't be perfect, but that's why I want to play it because, well, life isn't perfect. And also, you get a sense of, this is only from a few years ago, of what the live experience would be like. This is just a great tune. 9:17, we are open for business. Holy smoke, that's set. Tom Jones, and he does that. Well, he certainly did. That was in a set that I saw during the summer, and it is not good. So he does all the knicker throwing stuff, and that's great. And then he does this other kind of more mature, if you like, soulful numbers like Tower of Song, and even his version of Great Balls of Fire and things. It's just not good. Anyway. Tom Jones, live at the Marquee, Cork, 2nd of June. Tickets on sale next Thursday. I'm just excited about it because we all need to go. That's what I'm saying. Just for the crack of it. Okay, texts. I'm with you on Tom Jones, says a text. He's wonderful. I saw him in the O2 a few years ago. An amazing performer with his voice. Superb. That's Yvonne, says, P.S. I only watch The Voice in the hope he'll sing. That's I do the same thing, The Voice UK. Watch him. Because now and again, whoever's on the panel with him, they get up to sing a song. And it's great. And then he comes on. Like, it's the master surrounded by apprentices. Amazing. My mother said the text, my late mother used the word trumpery. Well, how prescient she was in some respects. Meaning showy items of little value. Yep. Don't be giving out about comfort turkeys. You'd be lost without yours on Christmas Day. Yeah, but I don't pet it and try and bring it in my car and walk around the place. People bring their comfort animals, pet frogs on the planes. Is that called pettifrogging, says Joan, who's conflating all our words and items this morning. Good work, Joan. Bernadette says, I hate to hear someone say, long story short, it means quite the opposite. Indeed. Pettifoggers, says Aidan in Galway, are painful, but when they use those six words, to make a long story short, by saying that they've made the story longer, they have, I'm not a fan. Or it's not rocket science. Don't like that either, says Aidan. And yeah, so that's just a flavour of what's coming in. Text 51551. Just was reading a big piece this morning by Eaton Smallman, talking about an exhibition that's going around the UK called The Eye as Witness. And really it's about photographs and the Holocaust. And you might have heard in the news there that they are commemorating the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. And you know, I was there in December. I went to there with my oldest for a couple of days. We went to visit the camps, Auschwitz 1 and Auschwitz Birkenau. And it's an experience that strangely travels with you. I don't know if that makes sense, but I found it more impactful after I was there nearly than being there, because it gets under your skin. And not in a horrible, horrible way, even though the story is beyond horror, but in terms of reflection on the world and life and humanity. And anyway, back to this item, and it says, this article, it says, up to the point of liberation, almost every photo of ghettos and concentration camps displayed in almost every museum in the world is one that was carefully crafted and captured by the perpetrators. And as the world marks the 75th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp on Monday, a new exhibition suggests it's time to reflect on the way our often thoughtless use of these photos is continuing to perpetuate Nazi propaganda's messages, with images depicting Jews as terrified, pitiful figures, either meekly surrendering or dying in squalor. They're meant to be degrading, says a professor of modern history. They're meant to be anti-Semitic, the photographs. And it goes on to say, as the ghettos were cleared and those inside began to realise their fate, they went to great pains to hide the pictures, burying them in jam jars or sewing them into the linings of winter coats, for example. And there was the idea, this was that Jews that were being hunted down, they kept these photographs of normality, and that a bit like a message in a bottle, somebody at some point will find them, who might take a look at them with a more sympathetic eye and preserve their history. And one survivor, Joan Salter, eventually settled in London. She said, what really gets me is, when she goes to Auschwitz now, is the selfie. People take selfies at Auschwitz. It's remarkable. They have selfie sticks and they take their pictures. She says they just don't seem to understand where they are. And that level of narcissism really makes me angry. Whoever takes these kids should say, leave your phone in the coach. And yet you take pictures. I took a couple of pictures there. Not selfies, but, you know, I took it. I think, you know, when they are by McFry, I think I took two pictures in total, because I knew that the phone shouldn't be out all the time. So I just took two. One was of that image, and the other was of the railway line with one of the carriages on it, because I wanted to keep it and show it, essentially. And I'm glad I did, because the tour guide at the end of the tour thanked us all, our little group, for coming, and said, we appreciate you being here because we know that you're going to go and tell everyone about what you saw here. And that keeps the story alive. And I think there's sense in that. But there's no sense in nonsensical selfies. I think that's probably the best idea. It's crass. Now, at 9:26, Armando Iannucci, the man behind The Thick of It, one of the funniest TV shows of recent times, Veep, ditto. And he's got a new movie out based on David Copperfield by Dickens. He will be joining us after this.
The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1.
9:45 this Thursday morning, 51551. I wanted to share with you some of the texts that came in on the subject of funeral etiquette. I read out a list of things you should or shouldn't do. But you all had, well, many of you had very strong feelings as to what should or shouldn't happen at a funeral. Let me give you a flavour of them. One says, among the lists of don'ts at a funeral, please don't begin any sentence with at least. Like, at least it was sudden, at least she died at home, at least he didn't suffer, or after a woman has experienced a loss, at least you weren't that far gone, or at least you have another child at home, at least you knew beforehand that the heart had stopped, etc. Don't do it. It's sage advice. Another says, myself and my three children lost our darling husband and dad unexpectedly and we are heartbroken. But the most helpful thing anyone did for us were our wonderful neighbours across the road who looked after the dog and babysat the house during the day of the funeral. I'm absolutely sorry for your loss. I think it's probably fair to say, because I mean it. But I know that from being in Crumlin again recently, one of the things that I hear from parents of the children is because they're running around and they're adult, the greatest assistance is not sending in flowers, is not sending cards. It's actually going to the house, taking the wheelie bin and putting it out, or taking a lawnmower over and cutting their grass, or leaving a lasagna on the doorstep, in a manner of speaking, you know what I mean? Just practical, and not looking for a standing ovation for it. Just discreet help for the what you might think are little things actually quite help. It just brings people. That's what I learned from those visits, and equally with people who are going through bereavement. Joan says, after minding my brother for 5 years through cancer, at the wake, my brother-in-law hugged me and whispered in my ear, "Your work is done." And I felt so comforted, I will always remember it, which is good. Catherine says, I can't believe you never mentioned anything about men wearing shorts at a funeral, because yes, they do. My uncle's girlfriend, who the family didn't really like, past tense, videoed my other uncle's, a very young man who died suddenly, funeral. And it was horrific. When my grandparents heard, they were very upset. Videos and pictures at funerals are just simply wrong, says that message. And one simple one from Peter in Cork says, I would say ignore the don'ts and ask that listeners please do go to removals and or the funeral, because fewer and fewer people are going to them these days. So that's, I think, wise advice from one and all. Thanks for taking the time to send all those in. 51551. Other texts include, Deirdre said, please keep up the great work, Armando. The thick of it is class. It is. But I think we've gone beyond parody now. That's the strange thing. Another says, I heard about Elodie O'Reilly's letter. I read it out yesterday. She had the idea of Tinsel Toy Show Fridays. She came up with this for Vincent DePaul. I shared the thoughts with my colleagues and they thought it was a great idea. So thank you for the inspiration. That's from Aoife from the St. Vincent DePaul fundraising team. We'll talk to you again, Aoife, about that, because the Toy Show team were on to me yesterday and they feel it's a great idea. And I just think every school child wears something Christmassy on the day of Toy Show for a euro. And that's a lot of euros. And it was all from the brain of a child. And that makes it even more sweet and kind and charitable. And we love it. So thank you very much indeed for that. OK, at 12 minutes to 10, we're going to go here. All right, that's the Ballad of Tom Jones. At 7 minutes to 10 this Thursday morning. On Tom Jones says, Sally, you're so right. That voice, I met him at the recording of The Green, Green Grass at Home in 1966 when working in Decca. What an interesting time to be working at Decca. He was a one take only guy, simply wonderful voice, which he nearly lost. Very nice person. My daughter went to see him in LA a year or so ago and tells me he's still got it. Well, as I say, I was there looking at him during the summertime and he has it. And the rest. Shay says, I always say, to make a long story short, and while telling everyone very long stories, and my wife Helen will always interject, it's too late. Yeah, it's too late, because he's already well down the road. John in East Cork says, as a lover of words, you would really love Benjamin Dreyer's Dreyer's English, an utterly correct guide to clarity and style, but be sure to get the UK edition. Thank you, John. I haven't heard of it, but it sounds certainly of interest. On pettifogging, if you're just joining us, that's the word that was used by the Chief Justice at the Trump impeachment hearings, and everyone's wondering what the hell did he mean, and it essentially means unnecessary or boring detail in a story sort of thing, much like what I've just done there. A woman in the shop yesterday pays for two onions and then realises, this text says, then realises two onions are more expensive than four onions, gives out to the shop assistant and asks for money back while continuing to be annoyed at the girl, who was probably affected by the counter for quite a while afterwards. Life is more than quarrelling about onions. Yeah. And yet you wonder, what brought her to the point that she's arguing about onions? Like, does she go out and get in her car and drive to somewhere really sad or something awful? That's what I've learned in recent years, is give her the benefit of the doubt, because who fights over onions? It's got somebody who's got to be going through something. Unless they were born fighting with onions. You know, some people probably came out of the womb saying, where are the onions? I hate those onions. You know, they just came out argumentative or grim. You know, it's in the genes. Sinead, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
It's really good to talk to you today.
Thanks. Good to talk to you too.
And what has us talking? You sent us a message about...
I sent a message because when you were talking about Crumlin, you were talking about, you know, the practical,
yeah,
I suppose, help and making people food and all the kind of, I suppose, practical things that need to be done whenever you're in hospital with a sick kid.
Did you have such a connection?
Yeah. So my daughter, who is now 8, has been attending St. John's in Crumlin since she was 4.
That's the cancer ward there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's an oncology patient there.
Yeah.
And has been through treatment and then relapsed. And we're actually getting our bags packed to head over again to the day ward at the minute. So
it's an extraordinary place, as you well know, Sinead, and the staff are knockout and the families are just amazing. I mean, mums and dads there, and I don't quite... They were very honest the other day when I was up. They said, I said, how do you keep the head up? They said, don't worry, the head's up talking to you, but it'll go down. You know, it's not an easy time. But I suppose the point you're making is that people can be very helpful in small ways that are actually quite big.
Yeah, people can be very helpful. And I suppose for us, we have 2 other kids. And I suppose the help that we get with them is really important. You know, that we know that they're with friends or they're with family and that they're happy and they're able to go to school and to go to their activities. Even when we're very taken up with time in hospital, we have spent a huge amount of time, be it day ward or be it overnight. So, yeah, we've been very reliant on friends and family to help with the siblings.
Yeah.
So I think that's a huge thing. And as you say, like the flowers and the presents, you know, we can get by without those. We need the practical help.
I can understand that. And people shouldn't be behind, you know, the door coming forward to say, Sinead, you know, I'm going to take the bins out on Thursday for you, or, you know, there's a lasagna, I know you're busy, or I'll tell the kids.
Yeah,
just offer.
Yeah, exactly. And we've had wonderful friends who've made food for years, you know, they've kept us fed. And, you know, so when we're in John's as parents, we have something decent to eat, which is really, really important, you know, and help like that is, it's priceless, you know.
Yeah, that's the point. And Sinead, I hope your little dote is okay, and pass on our love to her. And to all your gang, and we'll be talking all about that wonderful hospital on the Late Late Show tomorrow.
So I look forward to watching.
Yeah, it'll resonate with you, I've no doubt. Listen, mind yourself. Good luck today, okay?
Okay, thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Mila. Good to talk to you. Talking about Auschwitz there, on Friday week, we're going to be inviting Tommy Reichenstahl, that extraordinary man who survived the camps, but also Susie Diamond, another survivor, on the Late Late Show. And it'll be just one of those interviews that you will not see again in the history of time by mere fact of age and chronology in some respects, but very appropriate to have them on next week. But in the meantime, thanks for all your texts on so many different things, including your newfound love of the word pettifogging, of which you'll hear none on Sean O'Rourke Show, which follows after the news at 10 o'clock. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.
The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1.